Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Hi, this is Chris Keene with Cannon Ford Lincoln. Forget about the tariffs raising prices. Ford Motor Company has lowered prices. Employee pricing across the board on Ford and Lincoln products. Come see us at Cannon Ford Lincoln. When the smoke clears, nobody beats a Cannon deal. Nobody.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome in. Hello, hello, hello. My goodness. There's a famous, some Greek philosopher once said, the only constant in life is change. Well, we're seeing that just in the weather. It's not only everything else, but this weekend, I have to say, anytime I notice that the temperature in the daytime is one temperature and the low is another temperature and the actual low is lower than both of them, it's a very interesting configuration of weather that we've got going on here in the southeast. Far to our south, they're floating a little bit, and of course, much to our north, Arkansas is having devastating times. We send out our love and light to them, as well as to the folks in Missouri, because they're probably going to get another 8 or 9 inches of rain there this weekend. There's more to come here in the deep south, too. We will see what happens. But the good news is that we gardeners persevere in the face of all of these things, and we just keep right on going. That's what the Garden Mama Show is all about, and that's why I'm so happy to be here with you to talk about your plants, talk about what you want to do, talk about what you wish you hadn't done, or talk about the plants that we actually don't like. And there are a few of those. Everybody's got some. Good morning, Lance.
Well, good morning. Right out of the gate, Mike Hippie from Houston. He had a quick question for you. He said, if I plant 6 onions on the outside of a 5-gallon bucket on the rim, can you put a pepper plant in the middle of that?
That would be a few too many for me.
Okay.
I might do 3 onions and a pepper plant. I know that Mike fertilizes a lot, and you do have to fertilize 5-gallon buckets really frequently because the plants that you are growing in them tend to be pretty heavy feeders, vegetables and even onions, although we don't think of them as being particularly heavy feeders. They are. It takes a whole lot, particularly when you start coming in there and cutting off the green onions to eat them. They got to grow some more, so you have to help them out a little bit. I would do 3 and a pepper plant. I picked up a Tabasco plant yesterday. It was the first one. Well, I grow one every year because I think they're so pretty, and I do like to put those in pepper vinegar. But it was a particularly healthy plant. I take it as a sign of good luck. It had already branched, so I'm going to have two strong central branches of this plant, which is kind of fun.
I love Tabasco sauce.
Yes.
No, absolutely.
What's not to like?
Just the original.
Yeah, what's not to like?
Now, there's great others, too. Louisiana Hot Sauce and Cajun Chef and all those.
Crystal.
But, man, Crystal's really good, too. But, yeah, there's something about the Louisiana Hot – I mean, the Tabasco that's just – you can put it on so many things.
Well,
versatile.
And it has – for those of you who don't eat hot sauce and don't eat greens and beans, this is – you know, just go ahead and drink your coffee, and I'll be with you in a second. I really think that there's something to be taught in putting pepper vinegar on greens – and hot sauce on beans. Too many people mix that up, and then they wonder why they don't like it. So just a tip for any of y'all who may be just coming up into this world. It is definitely Southern food. Put some cornbread on the side, and we're there. We're ready to go.
I mean, I put Tabasco on Lay's potato chips. That's how I mean, like each chip gets a little dot.
That brings me to the chiwis. You know, I like chiwis. They're one of the little smaller bags of stuff. That's another reason I like them, because I'll eat the whole big bag of Cheetos I can't do that. So get the small. But they're also crisper, and they're made in South Louisiana, so they have a particular flair to them. In the case of the jalapenos, though, they were actually spicier than I wanted to eat yesterday, so I've got to find something else to eat them with. It will not be Tabasco sauce.
The chiwis that I've had, I love all of them. Every one of them.
The green onion one is wonderful.
They're so good. I mean, you can't stop eating them.
That's
the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem. They count on that.
Got to buy a case of them at one time.
They count on that so that they can keep making more.
Well, that's good, because if you make something that tasty, it's going to work. that's going to work. I mean, because I'm going to find it, and you turned me on to them. I'd had them before, but I'd never really had – I think I'd had just the cheddar or whatever, but I hadn't had the green onion.
The flavorful, you know, the whole line of them.
Took me to a new world.
Everybody's trying to do that in what they're making. Whether you can be buying petunias. You may want to look for a pink petunias. There's going to be four of them at the garden center because everybody wants to have the one they like. I'm a bubblegum petunia person. I found that one to be fun, and I did buy a basket this year just to add to the collection. And it bloomed out much darker in the first place than it had done, than the others had ever done. And now it's actually coming around to its regular color, which I think is kind of interesting. But it's one of those things, change is constant. It's nothing else that you can actually see, but you can actually see the change in color. Good morning. Oh, Papa blooms. How cool is that? Bill in Poplarville. I'm tickled, but I am too. That's wonderful. That's really neat. You know, pawpaws are one of those plants that we don't grow as often as we could. Catalpa is the other. Now, granted, you got to have a big yard because they're not small trees. But they're wonderful, and they're southern, and that brings me to native, which is April is Native Plant Month. So there you have it. Who's on the phone?
We got Miss Mabel on, and she's ready to have a – she has a question. You know, everything's in bloom, ready to go, and she goes, "I got work to do."
She's right. Good morning, Mabel. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I want to know. I got my garden growing, but now we need to know when do you fertilize them again?
Okay.
And what you fertilize them with?
You got flowers and vegetables.
No, we got flowers in the pots. We just took the.
Got your vegetables.
Yeah.
Well, I'm growing tomatoes, and of course I grow my parsley and that sort of stuff in pots. And I was telling myself yesterday that I need to fertilize either before or after this next round of rain that you and I are going to have because we live so close together. If you have a granular fertilizer, you have, you know, one that you sprinkle onto the top of the soil, put that on this afternoon before it rains. If you're going to use one that you mix up in water, wait until after it rains and then use that. But you can use any of them. You can use the ones that you have, like, for example, if it says tomato food, you can still use that on peppers and eggplants and beans. If you needed any for beans, we hardly ever do. But it's really just a matter of giving them a little bit of something so they can keep growing at a steady rate.
Okay.
Okay.
And if you got some in little cups, the okra and stuff like that, you got in a little cup, so. What do you do after you plant them in the ground?
When you plant them in the ground, you're going to want to put some fertilizer. I usually put some a little bit when I got them growing in those little peat cups. I will put a little bit of fertilizer further down in the hole, put a little soil on, and then put the peat cup in so that then as soon as those roots grow out of there, they're going to have some fertilizer that they'll hit.
Oh, okay.
So it's just kind of a little surprise for them.
Okay.
And that's also because I might forget to put any on the top, which I will do, but if I don't remember, at least there'll be some in the soil.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, then.
Thank you.
You all have a good one.
Y'all have a great day.
That's what I need to know.
Thank you, darling. Talk to you again soon. You know, people who garden are a particular bunch. We really love to see things do well, and that's an optimism that we not everybody shares. You know, if you've never put a seed in the ground, or you've never planted a little plant and seen it get bigger and better, you just don't understand what we're talking about. But we'd love for you to try so we can bring you into our little group, our big group, not so little actually. Oh my goodness. Mike has a interesting, this is a big deal. I've known people that ate this my whole life. It's hot bacon drippings on lettuce with onion greens. It's not my thing, but it's really appropriate for a whole lot of people, and they love it. I like bacon in a spinach salad. So it's almost the same thing, but just a little bit different. Pretty neat. Let's see. How fun. Let's see. This is from, where are we at? Madison. All right. Good morning. It's a text that says, my potatoes in a container that were 2 inches tall last week are now 8 inches tall. Should I begin filling them gradually with leaf mold? Yes. And you don't have to do it too gradually. You probably want to do a couple of inches and then let this rain hit and come back and do it the rest of the way up. Unless, for example, if you're going out of town Monday, go ahead and finish the filling up, because by the time another week passes, they're going to be another 4 or 5 inches tall. How much of the top should be left exposed? You absolutely want to leave that, the big cluster of leaves that, and the top of the plant. Generally speaking, I'm going to leave the top, that top cluster of leaves, and fill up to the leaves below it. So there's a little bit of stem and a little bit of plant coming up out of this mulch that we're growing them in. Yeah, barbecue chiwis are the best, according to this listener. I can't disagree. They're terrific. Now, here is a question. This is going to start a controversy, because it always does. If you, like me, are living in oak tassels, and this gardener is, what do you do with them besides keep them out of the swimming pool? Peaches Patrick will be here with us next week. This week he is, in fact, scooping all of the oak tassels away from the swimming pool. But if you have them, yes, you can compost them, but you don't want them in one big lump in the compost, because they will literally get wet and stick together and just be there. So spread them around. I'm not going to mulch with them. I will put them in the compost, though, in layers with, among other things. Scoop them up, you know, rake them up with some leaves or something else and use that together. Even some grass clippings, because it's probably about time to be mowing that yard. Probably about that time. Today is a lot of days, as always. I really think I'm going to just start making these up. And it's going to be a day that I declare. Today is Delphinium Day. No, it's not. Well, I guess it could be. Today is Love Our Children Day. I'm pretty sure that's every day. Today is Be Active, Be Healthy, Be Happy. It's a whole week. I think this is what we talk about all the time around here. And, in fact, if you follow me on social media, you got a couple of my bee shots, my very best bee shots, yesterday. But it's an interesting thing to think about. You know, one person's weed is another person's dandelion. Today is Dandelion Day. Dandelion is like moss in the garden. There are people that will do everything to get rid of it, and there are people that will do everything to cultivate it. That's why we're gardeners. We're not supposed to agree about everything. We're just supposed to go, look at that. That's interesting. You did a really good job of that. It may not have been what I wanted to do, but you did, and you did it very, very well. So that's where we're talking about dandelions. Dandelions have so many, just so many wonderful, wonderful bits and pieces of lore. People do make wine out of them. I can't say that I've ever had any. I've had some tea that had dandelion in it, but it didn't taste anything except green, so I can't tell you if I liked it or not. It wasn't anything particularly big. But because dandelions will grow literally between the cracks in the sidewalk, they are seen as a symbol of resilience, that they can actually survive difficult circumstances and still go on and bloom. And that, I love that. You know, it's part of the Victorian language of flowers. The dandelion is seen as love because it is stalwart, because it is devoted, because it is absolutely indefatigable. It's a delightful thing. Now, on the other hand, they're also known as hairy witches by some people. Dandelions have a very wide appeal and disappeal all at the same time. I'm particularly interested in the fact that the number of seeds remaining on the head after you blow the flowers off is supposed to tell you how many children you're going to have. I don't know who decided that. Fortune teller told me I was going to have 4. She was right. That was a long time ago. I was shocked. She told me some other things, too, that turned out to be true, but I won't share those with you. The best part about dandelions, though, is that they're also called shepherd's clocks, because they open on the shepherd's schedule. You know, they open bright and early in the morning and they close at dark at the same time that the shepherd would be moving the sheep back into the other safer place. Just funny. I don't know why we attach so many things to plants, but I believe it's because there are so many of them. They're everywhere, and we see them all the time, and there's got to be a reason for this, is the way human beings usually think. So there we have dandelions. I know there are people who spend lots of money to kill them. I know there are also lots of people who spend lots of money to grow them. They will grow in difficult soils. They'll grow in the same conditions, you know, that things like zinnias grow in. That is to say, you don't need to fertilize them. They're going to be okay by themselves. But as a plant, as a thing that you find when you're a kid, wasn't it amazing to see that this yellow flower a few weeks later turns into this magnificent, magical ball of seeds that blow away and go everywhere? I got in trouble once for blowing dandelion seeds out into the lawn because they didn't want them in the lawn. But, you know, that it's just the thing. It's dandelions. It's delightful, really fun stuff. I am particularly intrigued by an email that I got that has some tomato seedlings that are having a bit of a problem. And I'm just going to real quickly, I don't know what the problem is here, but I'm going to tell you what it takes to have these tomato seedlings do better than they're doing. It takes good air circulation around the plants so that we're not keeping them too wet. What we're seeing in this is some skinny stems. The first leaves look great, but the stems are then skinny and have lousy leaves on them and are actually kind of collapsing a little bit. So it's not damping off. Damping off happens when the new seedling comes up and keels over. All right. That's a problem in the soil, which is why we use a sterile soil to start seeds in, or something as close to that as we can get. But it's also true that if we are leaving the lights on all the time, the plants can't cope with that. So these are growing in a beautiful grow light setting. If the duration is too long, you can cause the plants to really shoot up. And if it's too small, too short, they will also struggle. So if the soil's really wet, or if the soil is really dry, that's a problem. If the timing on the lights is more than 10 hours a day, more than 12 hours a day, some people leave it on 24 hours and it doesn't work real well at that point. Or on the other hand, if you're only turning it on for 6 hours, you need to get something more in the middle. And some fertilizer is probably not going to hurt, but at this point, I think we need to try and get the plants to recover. So that's my take on all of that this morning. There will be more, I promise. I love that. That's a beautiful picture. Paula from Dentville, her turtle loves the dandelion. Now, of course, he will love the dandelion to death, and that's kind of nice, too. We have to have something to feed our wildlife. This is Wildlife Week, by the way, y'all. And by the way, hold on now, that is one word, wildlife, not two. We're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to have a party. Well, of course we'll have a party, but we're not trying to have a party week. We're trying to have Wildlife Week. Talk about that and so many other things. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Bad, bad boys was on our trail. Better out as long as all in jail. But these words keep ringing in my ear.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services. We are the people, Mississippians. We are the land, growing food, fiber, and timber. We are there when you need us, from the roof over your head to the food on your table. We are small town, but big moments, your next door neighbors. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. The only thing constant is change. For those of you who are expecting to hear Mark Peaches Patrick's voice in here this morning, he'll be here next week. We made a change. We'll be at Doris Berry's in Pearl next week, too. We made a change. See, everything's changing. That's just life, isn't it?
You just got to fast for the whole week now. So when you get over there, you can just eat jellies and jams and bring some biscuits or something.
Listen, I got some Louisiana strawberries there last week. Oh, they were good.
Strawberries look great right now.
I ate all of them.
Yes. Smoothie, strawberry drink.
All of that.
Strawberry syrup.
Yep.
I used to love making when I did bartend. I'd love making strawberry syrup. I think, you know, jam's one thing, but that's like some way more work. You know, I like the.
Not just, if you make freezer jam.
Yeah, no, I just
that
throw
one's really
you
easy.
Make you a simple syrup, throw a bunch of strawberries in there, warm it up, mash it up,
and then
strain it a few times, and you have the prettiest syrup ever, and it'll save for quite a while. But
I like the
jam stuff, that was like Mamaw's. I mean, she could really do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks that make a better jam than I do, but I really do like it.
I'm a
nut for strawberries anyway.
It's funny because it's this time of year where you go and people have the strawberry jam.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple places that I would go in Oxford that I loved them. And you would go and they would be out. I mean, like, yeah, we're out.
It's gone.
Yeah.
You missed it.
So you had to really get ahead of the game sometimes because if the game's out, then everyone knows about it.
I'm going to really make you crazy now because the best one I ever had was a bacon strawberry jam.
Oh, yes.
And it was really
amazing,
delightful. It was, you know, I was very surprised. I don't like chocolate dipped bacon. I've never eaten it. I just don't like the idea.
I'm not going to, you know, go against the grain there.
Yeah. But it's just funny. You know, that's one of those bits and pieces that you have to think, well, okay, maybe not. We're on kind of a random morning, Deb in Wesson says, did you know that inside a mouse's ears is a perfect heart shape? I did not know that.
I've not gotten that close to them.
I have not.
Without my cat, I've already gotten a hold of them.
Oh, dear. Well, that's true.
Like a mouse. Yeah, usually when I see a mouse, it's the cats have already gotten a hold of them.
That is a problem. You know, April is Native Plant Month. And Native Plant Month means we need to pay more attention to what is closer to us. Sometimes we human beings feel like that thing that we can't quite reach, that unavailable plant, that person that we can't quite get to know, you know, is really the best and the object of our affection. Well, okay, that keeps things interesting. But on the other hand, there's native plants. Natives are better adapted to our southern soils than plants imported from other ecosystems. That's just the truth. It can be that they do pretty well. Let's think crepe myrtles, for example. They do great, but they're not native here, and they do have problems. In fact, now that we've seen their biggest problem lately, the crepe myrtle bark scale, we understand just how vulnerable they are because they're not native. Natives are most often easy to grow. They may require you to be a little bit patient because they may not be as beautiful coming out of the container from the nursery as they will be in a year or two. I think oak leaf hydrangea is when I consider that. So be sure that you're understanding what the plant's going to look like. It can take Itea for maybe a couple of years to actually put on the beautiful cascades of flowers that they have right now. Or Paris as well is another one. But they're beautiful and they're worth the wait. They're worth your time to get to know. They really don't take a whole lot of fertilizer, so that also goes into the easy part of growing them. They need a good soil. Generally speaking, one that drains well, but there's some that will grow in absolute clay. So that's when you need that, you look for native plants. Really, the design quality of native plants for me is really, really important. The contribution to the sense of place that I get from having a buckeye tree in my garden is just really important to me. And it probably is to you. You may have another plant, but there's something that you're just crazy about. Maybe it's a gigantic magnolia tree. Maybe it's a particular one of, you know, any number of things. Somebody was saying today that they like blue-eyed grass. That was their favorite native. Well, that's great. That's wonderful. Other people spend a lot of money, again, to kill it, but you want it. I love it. I think you should grow some. It's a delightful plant. Natives often are better adaptable too. When we look at the drought year followed by the record ice year followed by the record rain year, The natives are really the ones to usually a little bit more shrug it off. When I think of that, I think of the longleaf pines after Katrina, and actually after Camille as well. You'd drive through the state, and there would be trees snapped off, and there would be trees that were just bent that eventually stood back up. Those are the longleafs. Those are the natives. The shortleaf pines, short needle pines, don't, because they're not native here. They can't adapt the way that the others can do. One of the things that I'm also particularly interested in is wildlife habitat, of course. And if we are not providing, you may hate hackberry trees, but leave one back in your wildlife area, because it's a pollinator plant. You know, it's a plant that is specifically a host plant for some of the pollinators that we're looking for, the hackberry butterfly in this particular case. But you may not want to put some of the natives in the prominent positions, because they only bloom once, and then that's what their joy is, very short-lived. But that's okay, because they're part of the integral part of, again, your wildlife garden, your pollinator garden. Well-behaved natives are not bullies. I like that. There are some well-behaved plants that are not bullies anyway, but in this case, if you put those native plants into really, really super overproductive soil, you're going to find a little bit of trouble. And by that, I'm referring to the obedient plant, for example. If you put that in a very rich garden soil, it'll be 8 feet tall, and you'll never get rid of it. Like teenagers with a credit card, they can run a little bit wild if you overfeed them. So native plants, though, are something to consider. And I hope that when you go to the Garden Club of Jackson's tour, you'll gather some information from Cecile Wardlow's. Her garden is going to have information as well as plants that are in the native group, and you'll have the opportunity to learn a lot more about that there, okay? There's so much to talk about when it comes to them. It's just, if you've got a native plant you want to ask about or you want to recommend, let me know. I would be happy to help out. I love this. Grass snobs would hate my yard. Tons of clover, dandelions, three-seed mercury, and something with little tiny purple flowers. Probably henbit. The only thing I remove is thistle or prickly weeds. That's a good choice. And we call that mow what grows. If it's green, we like it. And when it blooms, it's got some pollinator benefits to it. I have to say that y'all have heard me talk about the hell strip that won't grow anything. Well, it will grow clover, it turns out. So I'm happy to report that it's full. That's delightful. Let's see. Laura has a good question from Flora. Oh, your dogs are cute. I'm sorry. I'm scrolling back up. You know, I always do that. Speaking of habitat, do you have thoughts on dead hedges? Yeah, I do. If you can leave a little bit, if it's dense enough for them to rest and nest in, I don't have any problem with that, with leaving that. On the other hand, if it's a fire hazard or if they're collapsing, then obviously you're going to get rid of it, or if it's just part of an important part of the view. But if it's in the wildlife area or the wilder area of your garden, why not leave a little bit of that, because it makes such a good perch, and your critters always need a place to perch. So I appreciate that very, very much. I'm particularly intrigued with herbs. And when we talk about herbs, we're talking about things that we don't usually need a whole lot of. You'll see these landscape pictures where they have creeping thyme going all the way up a walkway. And I just think, you know, that's great, but my goodness, I don't need that much of that. A couple of pots is plenty, and I eat a whole lot of thyme. So that you need to really put this in perspective for what you actually want to grow. And I think sometimes we don't do that as well as we might, just because we're over-enthusiastic. I have done that myself this year. I always have one parsley plant or one pot of parsley that doesn't do so well coming in from the fall all the way to the spring. Well, they all grew beautifully this year. So I am now up to my ears in parsley, and it's getting to be toward the end of that season. They will begin to bolt. They will make it more difficult to keep growing as a nice, tasty parsley. So I will, after I use some for the Passover Seder, which is the main reason that I like to grow it through the winter, other than the fact that I like to eat it, I'm going to freeze a bunch of it just like I do the basil, because I have so much of it. So if you have other things you want to do, I don't like dried parsley particularly, so if you want to talk me into that, I'll be happy to have the conversation. But I'm really big on freezing herbs when it comes time to preserve them as often as possible. My bay leaf tree has a few problems on it. It's got some spotty leaves. I plucked all of those off, and they really are looking better. There's a lot to be said for that particular plant as a pretty hardy plant. When you go to supertalk.tv today, you will see floating tulips. No, I don't have tulips floating at my house, but I'm happy to tell you that in Holland, they put tulips everywhere, and this was at the garden there to celebrate one of the Queen's anniversaries a few years ago, and I just always put that into my spring collection of slides to look at simply because I want you to know you can think outside the box in the garden, and you can literally float tulips if you want to. There's a picture in there today, obviously, that I did not take because I'm not as intimately friendly with water and frogs as our friend Gary is. But Gary took that beautiful picture of a frog perched in the garden at, I'm pretty sure, Clinton Community Nature Center is where that was from. From my garden today there, you will see both a bee on some lyre leaf sage and a bee in a snapdragon. Wow, the snapdragons are so pretty this year. That's been so much fun. But at any rate, whatever's on your garden mind, this is the place to talk about it, and I really do enjoy having the opportunity to hear what you're growing. That pawpaw flower is so pretty. My goodness, that's cool. Herbs really do change a lot of things for us. They change, if we don't grow anything else, they change the way we cook. Because whatever we're cooking, if we add fresh herbs to it, we're probably going to use a little less salt, and we're also going to have the opportunity to do some maybe a little bit more flavorful, you know, a little bit differently flavorful. I think about some of my tomato sauces that are, generally speaking, basil with some tomato sauce in it. I like that. However much you like or don't like, you can adjust when you make your own. I'm also really tickled to let you know that we do grow some things from seed, like basil, but there are other herbs that are really better for us to start as a plant because it's going to take a little while for them to get going. I think of the sages and the various and sundry sages actually do better for me if I go ahead and get a plant. And I think that there are some that, you know, you just like that first year, so even though they might come back, they might turn perennial, you may not want to use them that way. For example, I add to the thyme group of plants every year, even though I have some that are maybe 5 or 6 years old. So you have to kind of decide how you like that. I like the darker taste of the older ones that have been a little bit more tortured. They've frozen. They've been in the heat. But sometimes you just want that super fresh taste, too. And that's where you go for the newer plant. I really do think that there are some plants better grown in containers, but you can grow just about any of the herbs that you want to grow in a pot. You can grow rosemary even as big as it's going to get. You can grow lemongrass even as big as it's going to get in a container. So I have no problem with you doing that. But I'm also going to say that there's sort of you need to have enough of it. For example, if you're going to grow oreganos, you need to have enough so that you can use the rule, you know, that you're going to really basically be using a tablespoon of fresh herb to give the same effect as a teaspoon of a dried one. So you do need more of the fresh herb. And that might be something that's important to know for you. I just have so much fun with herbs all the time, and I really hope that you will too. If you grow them in poor soil, don't make a fancy potting soil. Make one that's a little bit on the edgy side. Give them a half a day of sun, moderate amounts of water, low amounts of nitrogen. Again, it's this easier thing to do. And if you will cut them first thing in the morning, they will have more concentrated oil than after they have been in the sun all day. That's herbs. Let me see now. Ken says, Ken's got philodendrons. I think you need some fertilizer, Ken. I think you need more regular watering on these things, and I think you need some fertilizer because they look dry and they just don't look like they're growing as well as they could be if they had a more dynamic system, which is to say, water regularly, fertilizer every couple of weeks for a while till you get them going, and then they'll kind of take care of themselves. You'll still give them a little bit more as time goes by. But when you see those at supertalk.tv, they look good. He says they've just been sitting there. So you know me, I'm always going to say, let's push them. That's why we're gardeners. We don't want to just look at them. We want them to grow. Oh, goodness. Paula's got all sorts of things going on today. These are beautiful. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Y'all join us at supertalk.tv. See some clematis and pansies and that cute turtle. One thing and another from Paula. Thank you. Sue in Loosedale is sending pretty things, too. Oh, you got a, that's really neat. You got a bit of a gall going there. We'll talk about that and so much more after this.
So pure is the morning dew. The rail gold love this Friday too. For eyes they talk and say, come on. What killed me, baby?
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You did.
We've seen.
There are days. There are days when I don't know what's going on the other side of that glass, and this is one of them. It's always nice to have so much fun happening right near me, though. That's great. We're going to talk about that. This is the beginning of oak gall, is what I'm looking at in these pictures from Sue in Greene County. I'm sorry. It's not a big problem, but it does occur. And we just cut them off. They're not really a problem on the long run. They're really pretty, but you don't want to leave them on the tree. You do want to prune them off whenever possible. If you can't, if they're up too high, don't worry about it. But they're a thing. Holy moly. If you have a gigantic rosemary bush and you want to relocate it, yes, now is better than later. Woo, that is beautiful. Debbie in Ocean Springs. Be prepared. You're going to need to cut it back some. So you may want to, decide to dry some rosemary or decide to make some kind of big, great sauce that has rosemary in it and put it in the freezer, because you're going to need to cut this back by about a third of its overall size when you get it into the new spot. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant, so I know it'll be delicious. You know what else you can do when you prune rosemary? Or if you happen to have rosemary that has lost all of its needles off of one stick or something, one branch or something, and it looks kind of like a stick, you cut that off and then put those in water till they are very hydrated. We're not going to grow them. We're going to use them as skewers. And if you have never grilled tomatoes on a rosemary branch, you've missed a really good taste. It's a really delightful thing. You can do a lot of other things, too. It'll actually make squash taste good to some people who don't like squash. What a beautiful plant, Debbie. That's great. I love that. There are some interesting bits and pieces of things out here in the world. And frankly, I'm not really sure where to start. There's some headlines that you probably just need to hear. Wildlife smoke may worsen mental health, you think? Come on now, this is the Dove file. If I could get paid for that research, I think I could have come up with the particular same conclusion. That is not the case with hot Schrodinger cat states created. That, of course, is physics and way over my pay grade. But what a wonderful thing that we all now, know Schrodinger's cat, because it was pretty obscure for a long time. I think it's interesting, too, that we're looking at now, the way that bacteria develops, how it was and how it is and how it's going to be, because that's what gives us the interventions into, for example, trying to stop bacterial diseases from getting into our plants. If we understand where it's headed, we can maybe put up a roadblock. We can kind of slow some things down. You know, why not? Let's see. The text line is just really popping this morning. I appreciate y'all. There are, if you have a hydrangea and you want to transplant it, this is a great time to do that. But again, the problem's going to be we're about to cut off the flowers, because you've got to reduce the size of that, the top of that shrub relative to the number of roots you're able to get to go with it in order for it not to go into transplant shock. So if you can spare, for example, if mama's moving and you've got to get those plants out, certainly you'll have flowers next year, even if you don't have any this year. But give yourself the opportunity to do that. We were talking yesterday about if you hadn't pruned your crepe myrtles yet, last week they all leafed out. They all started in, you know, they're going to be in bloom probably in another 10 days. So it's better not to do that pruning now. You're going to need to come back, especially if it's heavy pruning. You'll need to come back next year and try for that. Did you ever wonder why young plants are more vulnerable to disease than older plants, just other than young and old being two different conditions? In talking about damping off, that's a problem that's exclusive to young plants. But, for example, if you go into a warm greenhouse that's been a little bit lower attended, less attended than it should have been, you may end up seeing some gray stuff on flowers that shouldn't have it on there. That's also the same Pythium and Rhizoctonia as the damping off, but it will get on the other parts of the plant if given a chance. So you don't, that's what we're trying to avoid with good air circulation and the other issues that we put into place, particularly ventilation in a greenhouse, to help those problems not be such a big deal to us. But the trade-off that happens, if younger plants are more disease-resistant, then they kind of use up their agency. They're not going to be the ones that end up doing the best in the long term. The ones that survive those problems of the younger plant, the ones that don't succumb to the obvious challenges that most young plants run into, are the ones that will be more stable later. It makes sense, but it is nice to have that in a very practical set of things from the University of Maryland to let us know about that. Very, very important. Today, my friends, yes, it is bell-bottom day. No, we don't have bell-bottom blues for you. I'm sorry. I warned y'all. I'm pollinated. The oak and I are a little too close at this point. Woo. Blowing all over the place. I did find out this week, though, that I can survive 72 hours waiting for the part for the air conditioner. I wasn't sure how that was going to go, but it turned out to be okay. I so appreciate when you have an older machine, sometimes you have to go a ways to find the part, because it's not like it's on the shelf, you know, down at the store. You have to go look for it. So
I'm a craftsman.
And he's delightful. He comes and puts it back together.
The house I had in Oxford back years ago, it had two big heat pump units, and they didn't even make them anymore. But the guy that was with the agency I used to maintain my HVAC, guy was a genius. He'd come by once a year.
They kind of have to be.
He'd come by once a year and change something. It was like him just doing it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like mm-hmm. a part for it. And then he'd come back and clean it about 6 months later. I mean, it worked like a charm.
Yeah, they're
and,
good.
You can't find them. I mean, not that people don't do great work, but the old school guy that can just go out to the truck and make something, you know, that's tough.
Well, and to find. It is. It's like a lot of other things. As you begin to recognize how difficult things can be to do, you appreciate that even more. It's not the simplest thing. Bubba and Sybil are in Meridian today. They're not gardening, but we appreciate them. How y'all doing? Can and should you divide hellebores? If so, when and how? As little as possible, but in late autumn, I'm sorry, goodness, after they bloom, now is an okay time to divide hellebores. It would be better to do before they bloom in the autumn. Okay? Okay. Debbie, I will recap that for you in the text line. That's so pretty. I'm just still fascinated by that rosemary. It's so, so pretty.
Isn't it a beauty?
Just gorgeous.
You say skewers, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I'm all in on that.
I'm telling you.
I don't see how you could go wrong with that.
Well, you just about can't. It's as long as you soak them long enough that they don't catch fire with the food on them.
Right.
You're in pretty good shape. You will be in pretty good shape. Going to talk about the three sisters in the next hour and some more on bell bottoms. I got way lots of stuff to say about bell bottoms. You know, they're not hippie pants. They're naval uniforms from the 19th century, but the reasons for them and all that are a little more complicated than we've thought about. And, you know, who doesn't want to talk about trousers after all?
It's kind of gone in the opposite direction, you know, with the pants. They're more skinny legs all the way down.
And well,
the bell bottoms just aren't around as much.
They don't face some of the challenges that they did. Wow, Ringo's enjoying a really big oomph right now. So let's enjoy this. We'll see you in the next hour.
Every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be under the sea. In an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
I was running until I wasn't. My hospital stay would have cost nearly $48,000, even with insurance. But with VA, I'll pay zero. And VA is the best, most affordable healthcare in America for veterans like me. Knowing that my family is waiting at home and a surprise medical bill isn't, that's good for my heart. My service was then, my benefits are now. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
We are agriculture, the number one industry in Mississippi. We are 180,000 member families strong, a century of generations. We are grassroots Mississippi in all 82 counties. We are Unified, the largest general farm organization in Mississippi. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hey, this...
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Those of you who are expecting to hear Mark Peaches Patrick speaking right now, he'll be here next week, and we will also be at Doris Berry's in Pearl right after that with one of her magnificent, big, beautiful baskets of everything Lance loves to give away. If you come to visit with us, you might win it.
There's stuff there that I love that I don't even know I love it yet.
You don't even know what it all is.
I don't even know what it is, but I know I...
They're assortment of jellies and jams and pickles and this and that and the other thing and recipes and all this other kind of stuff is just dynamic. It's really a lot of fun. And I've never tasted anything there I didn't like.
Actually, there are things there I know they have that I don't even know.
You haven't found them yet, but they're there. We're looking at Wanda's beautiful Peggy Martin Rose on supertalk.tv. She's in McHenry, Mississippi. Mine's not blooming. It did, however, fall over and get put back up. It's been kind of a rough year for that one. I think the shade has gotten too much in that particular area. So when I began putting it back up, I realized part of it had broken, so I have rooted two more, and I'm going to do something with them to get them into the sunlight would probably be very helpful to that plant. Sometimes if we succeed, the trees grow, and if they grow, they shade, and sometimes, you know, we have to change things around.
I know mine's not the same. It's more of a bush rose, but
you have the knockouts.
Yeah, they're looking amazing
gorgeous right
now.
Just gorgeous.
In the last week, have done so much. I noticed there was a little on a good number of them, little white dots, but they didn't seem to affect them. Would that be some type of little bug? Or
the
something?
Stippling that happens can be it can be a buggy problem, but if it's otherwise okay, what you're going to do after they bloom this time is shear the top off anyway because you want them to make more flowers, and that'll get rid of most of that.
And that's what I wanted to ask you next is once these are done and start, you know,
we do the deadhead. It has nothing to do with Jerry Garcia, but we do the deadhead.
Painstakingly, we'll deadhead.
If you do it one by one, you're going to go down the stem to the next five-finger leaflet below the flower and cut right above that because that's where the flower will appear. But I recognize and I know the practicalities of things. If you have 15 feet of knockout roses, you're probably not going to do them individually. So, yeah, you can hedge them off and, you know, take
Well, I'm going to cut them. Yeah. I'm going to clip them with my hand clipper, not
Good.
Electric. But
Good.
It's kind of like a
– For me, it makes a better effect, but I realize the practicality. And the knockouts are going to go on in bloom, so being precise with them is not
I'm
really
just such
important.
A – I don't know. I feel like doing it with the sheer – I like knowing that I got a really clean cut on the rose. Mm-hmm. I really do. I don't even like pinching them and pulling them. I just like to make sure that I get a snip.
A little snip. The pink one in my garden, which is a knockout that was a gift from Greenwood. Hey, y'all. Greenwood Marketplace. Anyway, it's a beautiful plant, and it really was growing too heavily on one side last year. I think that was facing the sunny side, and I didn't ever turn it around in the pot. So I planted it, and now it looks really nice because I evened it up. It has the same number of canes going in each direction. So that's the only other thing to do, really, with a knockout, is to make sure you're not leaning too far to one side and all the flowers are over here. You know,
well,
you
and these are in the ground.
You can see them. Exactly.
Yeah, and so that would be my next question to you. Is there anything I need to do before the weather gets really warm and dry to prepare the root system for that?
You want to fertilize them and mulch them, good.
What is the best type of fertilizer you would
– If I had to go buy some –
I don't want them to get any taller.
I was going to say, if I had to go buy some fertilizer for a knockout rose, it would be a very low nitrogen fertilizer because nitrogen is going to make more leaves. And they're already very efficient at making leaves, so we want more flowers.
Yeah, I've been very proud of the health of these, and definitely they've gotten to a height where I really like the height. Don't want to get them any taller, but I would love for them to continue thickening up.
I went by a construction site yesterday, and there was literally a construction fence around the knockout roses. they were beautiful, but oh, was it hot? Because there was a black construction fence, and those flowers were just keeping on going. I thought, oh, that's tough stuff.
Yeah, it's only like
but
82.
Probably 100 inside that space.
Exactly. You know? More microwave action.
But it was beautiful. So it was really lovely. Thank you for that, Peggy Martin. You got us started this morning. I do appreciate that. Oh, here we go. Here's another thing that happens. I was just reading an article from Antique Rose Emporium about black spot on roses. When the leaves get black spots, the leaves then turn yellow and then they fall off, and those black spots become the black spots of the future because they make a nest, and they don't make a nest like a bug does, but they fall onto the ground and the spores are able to live there until you get another rose or another flush of growth on that rose, and then they start up again. So one of the things that you can do to help your plants, if you have roses that get black spots, some varieties don't get it, some varieties get it a lot. Most everything else are somewhere in between. So if you see those black spots on the leaf, first sign, take them off and get them out of the garden. If it continues and it becomes a bigger problem, that's when you need to realize that you probably need to spray that plant with a fungicide, but it's not going to change the nature of the black spot at that moment. So it will prevent the future. So you still have to take those leaves off. Sometimes it's a matter of pruning. Sometimes it's just plucking them off. Really just depends. Most of the time it doesn't kill the rose. Sure does make it look awful, though. And it will because it reduces the leaf size or leaf numbers that are effective. It will reduce the size and number of the flowers if you let it go on too long. I have seen, though, situations where people go in and literally cut them down because they didn't like the black spot on the roses, cut them down, and the plants grow back, and they don't have it again until they do. So if you have a rose that you realize is going to have black spot at one point or another, give yourself the opportunity to inoculate it at this time of year with the fungicide meant for that particular problem. If it has been a big problem, if it's a little problem, don't worry about it. Just take them off and don't worry too much about it. Oh, interesting. Hey, Andy. Is there a type of grass that mixes well with zoysia? No. So that's the answer to that question. People will try to grow centipede with it. They have very different, they have similar looks, but they have very different needs. And it does not do very, very well. Some people will try and put carpet grass where the zoysia is not doing so well. It's an entirely different thing. It's really not a great thing. If you don't have enough sun for the zoysia, you may want to try a St. Augustine or something else, but again, it's going to be very, very different from the zoysia. Yes, it will take sod, but here's the good news. If you've got bare spots, you work them up, you get a square of sod and cut it into about 8 pieces, you can literally do at least 4 square feet with that one piece of sod if you will come back right away and water and fertilize it and nurse that along a little bit. It's not a very expensive repair. It is something that you can do. Let's see. Kathy has a need for grass that will come from seed that grows up without running and will tolerate full sun. Bermuda does not generally run. Bermuda does, however, grow very well from seed and can take both the heat and the sunlight of that you're talking about in zone 8. I've heard that there are others, that there are some of the mixes that I'm not that fond of on principle, that you will see it at stores and whatnot. So if you do one of those and it works, let me know. I would like to have one to recommend, but I don't have any particular one to recommend at this time. Okay? Okay. Good question, though. What do we do about that grass? Most of the time when the grass doesn't do well, like the bare spots that Andy describes, and sometimes the shade encroaching does this too, you need to check out what's different about that part of the lawn than the part where it's doing well. And it will either be that it is staying too dry or it is staying too wet, or it is just enough lower in profile that it ends up getting almost scalped by the lawnmower. So that's a different problem entirely. So you just need to figure out what the difference is. And yes, it's okay with me if you find that you have an area that you cannot replace or change that particular grass, put in a bird feeding station. It's okay. You know, you can change what you're doing with it and use that space for something else. It's all right. It's your yard. It's your yard. You can do what you want. Oh, my goodness. No, I don't. Anybody want to give some advice? I think my pond dam is leaking down low. Any knowledge about that? Anybody got some ideas for it? I don't know what the right approach is to that. So I would sure hate to have to deal with that myself. Y'all let me know. Somebody will know what the answer is. Somebody will give us some advice. Is there something that you can spray in monkey grass that will kill the weeds and not harm the monkey grass? No. That's just terrible. All my nose today. Over the top is not going to work in this setting. It's going to, because it will damage those grasses. Really the only answer is, if you're going to use an herbicide of any sort, even if it's vinegar and sunlight, or if it's corn gluten, or if it's Roundup, whatever, you can paint it onto those individual ones, and it won't get on the one next to it. But you can't. There's not anything to just spray that whole bed with. And yeah, that's a problem. I get that. I really do understand. I truly do understand. You know what else that people are doing right now? I get the most interesting questions. Y'all are so much fun. The Three Sisters is really where some of this started, and there are school groups that grow it. It's an indigenous American process of growing, and when we plant the Three Sisters, we are planting corn, we are planting squash, and we are planting pole beans, the ones that climb, not the bush beans. Because when we are putting these three things together, we are reenacting one of the best sustainable suggestions, methods, processes that the indigenous Americans ever taught to us as the people who came here from somewhere else. The Three Sisters, the opportunity for them to grow together works well, and it also, frankly, looks beautiful, and it produces food. So what's to argue with? Here's how it works. When you plant the beans at the base of the corn, obviously you put the corn in, it grows a little bit, you plant the beans and they climb up the corn. All right. Then you plant the squash at the foot of all that to shade out the weeds. So this is not just because they look pretty together. It's because it's a practical process and one which can work really, really well for you as a process. The Three Sisters themselves, of course, are, it's a venerated way of growing because you can do it literally anywhere. You know, you can, as long as you got some good weather, some bright sunshine, you can put it in a flower pot, you can put it in a big bed outside, you can plant acres of it, or you can do as many people have done and just put two or three spots outside the house. You get more corn, of course, if you plant a whole square of it, but you may not want quite that many beans. So there's a way of balancing these processes that make it make a little bit more sense from time to time. I have to tell you, this whole business about bell bottoms has been so much fun for me. Everybody thinks they invented everything. You know, we don't know history very well as human beings. But when you talk about bell bottoms and you talk about, yeah, it has changed a little bit, but that the bell bottom, the flair of it, the whole point was just practical stuff. It was hard. It's hard to roll up your pants when it's time to swab the deck, or if you're wading in the water or something. It's a lot easier if the bottom is belled out, is flared out. So that was where the whole thing started, was to just make it a more practical uniform in the 19th century. I will say this. I have read this several places. You can grab the bell bottom when the guy falls overboard. It's easier. It gives you something to hold on to. That's terrible, but it is something that you need to know about. It's also really a fashion trend that comes and goes. When we talk about fashion, many, many times people say that in times of prosperity, we use more fabric. That's when you will find bell bottoms and piazza pants, and mini dresses are not as popular as long, beautiful maxi skirts and that kind of stuff. Big coats as opposed to jackets. I don't know if that's true. Some of it's where you live, and some of it, frankly, is the time and what happened before. So bell bottoms came into favor in the 60s and 70s. So of course they fell out of favor in the 80s and 90s. We had to have a reason to buy more pants. You can't keep wearing the same pants. It's not going to work. So you buy more pants. Now they're back again, and the bell bottoms are coming back into popularity. And it is particularly hilarious to me to see little children's outfits, because you put bell bottom pants on a little person, you know, a little short child, and they look like they're about 6 inches tall. So it is not a style thing that's necessary for every fashionista, but it is something that we do appreciate and do use. And frankly, I'm tickled that they invented them. I'm surprised that they didn't invent them sooner. It's just a whole lot to all of that. And the business of trying to make sure that we have some opportunities to give ourselves more and more and more style and fashion and whatnot. Why not? You know, why not? I should probably, I don't know if I want to tell you this or not. It's International Firewalk Day, and I'm not going to do it. So I didn't have any idea. You look at this and you think, I've heard of that. And then you realize that you look up stuff and there's so many cultures that see that kind of what I call self-torture as being a sign of strength or of concentration or, you know, of your ability to really change everything. It's just interesting to me. And I don't know exactly what I think about it. It's fun stuff though. Really good stuff. Andy says, okay, that's what he figured. Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings. I wish that I could have invented I've said several times in my life that if I could go back, I would have developed more flowers for growing in the shade, because we do have so much shade. And by the time you get past caladiums and, you know, impatience, there's not as many other choices as there should be. But I do think that figuring out a product that you could spray over the top of things that actually worked on everything would be great. But we don't have that. We just don't have that yet. The whole business of firewalking goes back in India before the Common Era, like 1,200 years before the Common Era. So when someone introduces it to you and says, look, this is the newest thing we're going to use in our cultural, religious, whatever observances to prove how strong we are. Go back and read a few things because it's been going on for that long. They're everywhere from the Iron Age in India to ancient Rome. And frankly, I'm kind of intrigued by Fiji. They have a long history there, and you're not anybody unless you firewalk in certain cultures. It won't be me. Anyway, are y'all harvesting turnip greens? I bet you are. Hey now, stick around. We'll be right back.
Thank God for good direction. Turnip greens.
Propane has many business applications: residential construction, commercial construction, agricultural and landscaping, transportation, material handling, and power generation. To learn more about propane and its usage, visit mspropane.com. Energy for everyone. Propane, that's mspropane.com.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
You know that I mean what I say, so don't go and take me the wrong way. You know you can't go on getting the wrong way, cause if you do, it's going to get you someday.
Ah, singing and dancing with Bonnie and Delaney. What fun. When you're a gardener, you think about things in a way that I don't know that other people do. One of them is you think about what's next. You think about how things are doing in a very practical kind of way. But I think you also think about the stuff you haven't done yet. And I have been growing. This is another case where change can be a very, very good thing. I'm growing a tomato, and they're beautiful. The plants are just lovely. But I don't get online in the middle of the night and order stuff from, you know, Temu or any of that stuff. That's just not me. But I do look at a seed catalog every now and then online and go, I really need to grow that. Order that seed. Well, that's what I did with these. And it's Rebel Starfighter. If you go to Baker Creek, you can look it up. It's apparently one of their people are into it. I like dark red tomatoes is how I got to it. So, and they're also supposed to be better for you, but I eat so many tomatoes. If there's any benefit to them, I'm going to get it. So it's a good thing to have this one. But it's a case where you really do have to think about what you're doing and do something a little bit different. I hadn't grown that one before. I'm not going to find that in the stores. At the same time, I know how hard Tabasco seed can be to start because I've started them several different times. So I went and bought that plant. As gardeners, we make our own decisions about these things because we're going to feel good about it when we pick the Tabasco or when we harvest the tomato. How we get there is important, though, because we are process people. Gardeners like to see things happen. We're not observers. We're doers. And for the most part, that I think that is really the biggest piece of us that is different from folks who don't garden, is that we actually want to fool with stuff, fiddle with it, make it do better, see why it didn't work, or celebrate the fact that it just did so amazing we can't even believe it. Now, speaking of change, my friends, I had no idea. I was today years old, as they say, you know, in the jokes, when I discovered that there was an African humid period, time between 14,000 some odd years ago, when the Sahara Desert was a green savanna. Now, I grew up in my entire life understanding that the Sahara Desert was the epitome of deserts. It was, you know, dunes and dry and sand and all of that. I don't even think about these things, so I did not understand. But by identifying and analyzing the DNA of 2 7,000-year-old naturally mummified people, yeah, that's right, It was excavated in southwestern Libya. You know, that's right there at the edge of the Sahara. I mean, it's in the desert, but it's the edge of what would have been this humid area. They have shown that they belong to the long-isolated and now extinct human lineage that lived in this particular savanna. I had no idea. I did not know this. Because it's so arid, the whole part of trying to identify these creatures, and they were humans, but all of this is very difficult. This is a pioneering DNA study. Guess who did it? Our buddies at the Max Planck Institute, of course. We love to follow their stuff. I love to get drops in my email and stuff from them. I had a question in my text line about the picture with the water that we're showing today at supertalk.tv. That's at Lake Caroline. So I just love that picture, and it's one of those things that I try to put up every couple of years just because I think it's so pretty. But there's no particular significance to it except that I love it and it's gorgeous. And you know, who doesn't like to look at a little sculpture, a little water, you know,
some good plants growing,
little lagoon. Yeah. You know, it's a beautiful place.
Excellent setting to
so
hang
it's a lovely,
out
lovely, on. Lovely place. You wouldn't have a problem spending some time.
No,
there.
No, I would do that every day.
You would not have any trouble with that at all. Such good questions y'all have asked today. I'm not going to run back through everything, but in terms of pruning roses and moving plants around, pruning rosemary, for example, she appreciated the idea of making the skewers. I will just say again, if you cut rosemary stems for any reason, in this case she has to transplant the plant to a sunnier spot, you are going to have a plant that is subject to transplant shock. And the later we get in April, the bigger that is, because the nights are warming and the days are certainly warming. We have a good week right now, though, for some of that particular effort. And if you cut it back by a third, is the tradition in a shrub when you're going to transplant it, you're going to have a whole lot of rosemary, in this case, left over. So I suggest stripping the rosemary off, putting that to dry somewhere, and then taking the skewers, putting them, making the length that you want them to be, and making them into skewers by soaking them. You have to soak them. If you don't soak them, they'll catch fire, and you and the food will be very sad because it won't work. I have never seen anybody do that. I've only seen people do it correctly. So, let's see. But Bill in Poplarville, yes, I do think that Tabasco seeds are hard to sprout. They are in my experience, they're among the ones that really have to have bottom heat and still are going to take almost 2 weeks to sprout. And for me, that's hard. That's a long wait. So don't bury them too deeply and seed more than you think you need. That's my advice on starting Tabascos. Some days you feel like you can do anything. But even so, you may or may not want to try to grow Tabasco seeds. Pretty fun stuff. I'm so fascinated by this particular the one that we haven't talked about in terms of the traditions and days of the year and all that we have going on. I did not make this up, although if I could have, I would have. This is in fact First Contact Day. No, it's not an homage to Art Bell. It's an homage to Star Trek. For those of you who just turned off the radio, I hope you'll come back soon. You know, there are people that hate Star Trek. How can you hate Star Trek? I mean, there are people that hate everything, I guess. But there are people – I've gotten notes from people that said, I was listening right up until you said something about, I don't know, Worf. I mean, you know, I said something – but – First Contact, for those of you who know these things, and because I do like to sound relevant to people that are into this, is the story in Star Trek First Contact about the invention of warp speed, which is what allows us to get from here to there in a faster time frame, and therefore perpetuates the entire business of being able to travel to space in a relatively fast method. And the best part about it is the guy who played the guy who invented it, James Cromwell. When you watch that movie and they come upon this guy who is absolutely out of his mind, apparently, because this is not something that anyone had ever considered doing. And there he is. And I'll try it. I mean, obviously people had considered it. But in the way that he develops the warp speed thing and makes it work, it's a very exciting development, obviously, in space travel. But this happens April 5th, 2063. So for those of you who will be here, I wonder, we'll just have to see how that all turns out. We'll see. I'm fascinated, though, if you don't know who James Cromwell is and you don't know anything about Star Trek and think it's a really, you know, it's a relic of another day or something, or it's the thing that runs at night, you know, on the on the high channels, high numbered channels. James Cromwell, and I'm happy to tell you, just celebrated his 85th birthday. He still works sometimes. And he, though, the most particularly, probably the thing that more people remember him for than anything else is Babe. And when you're 6'7" and you're doing a show with pigs, you need to have something that makes you stand out. In his case, he certainly does. He has played a whole bunch of other Star Trek characters, though. You may or may not know that. But he was really fun. He played at least four different ones. For just to tie it all up into the old people world where I live, his first appearance on television was in 1974 in the Rockford Files. And I've seen it more than once. That's terrible. Now I'm going to start. Now everybody that watches the Rockford Files is going to start sending me clips, which is fun.
You got to love some James Garner.
I mean, come on.
I love him in the way that the support your sheriff.
Support your local sheriff.
It, great. And then, my fellow
Maverick.
Americans.
Yeah.
Maverick. I mean, yeah. my fellow
the
Americans.
Barbarians at the Gate.
Yeah.
Oh, my
great
goodness.
Stuff.
Great actor. He was among that group of people who came from World War II and had a full life already and said, well, I think I'll give this a shot, and went into acting because they were good at it. But there were a lot of people that didn't think that you could do that for a living, so they had to go, they went to see if they could. And in fact, obviously, his career just absolutely soared in that whole world. The other picture that you will see this morning, I've had four different requests, and I don't know what happens. Obviously, somebody wrote about this, or somebody blogged about it, or somebody demonstrated something using it. But yes, there is pink Turk's cap. The hibiscus that usually is red and has the kind of tight flower with the yellow stamen coming out the top. It's a really pretty thing and perennial. Not as fancy as other hibiscus by any means, but a beautiful way to fill a bed and have plenty of pollinator-friendly flowers. It's a really wonderful plant. The pink ones are just as beautiful, and I think they're pretty. There they are. They're so pretty. I like that. Deb and Wesson, that's very true. I'm really, really, I love goji berries, okay? And there's a good article by Dr. Eddie Smith in the Electric Co-op magazine. And if y'all don't know Dr. Eddie Smith, you should. He's real smart and he's real fun and he knows a whole lot of stuff in horticulture. You may see him as the face of Southern Gardening on the TV segments. And if you're on social media, by all means, follow Dr. Smith because he's so much fun. He goes to the most interesting places. And when he goes to shoot the television shows, he shows you the other plants, in his own blogs and stuff. It's really fun. Really nice guy, too. Thank you for listening, Deb. I do appreciate it. That was fun. Mary says, if you ever get a chance to attend one of Baker Creek Spring Planting Festivals, yes, indeed, I wish I could. It is well worth it. She says, far too many choices of vegetables. Yeah, that's true, too. I have a friend who has been associated with them for a very long time. He is now at the point in life where he says, look how this event has grown. It used to be, two speakers in an afternoon, and now it's, I think, 4 days. I mean, it's just brilliant. But Baker Creek Heirlooms is a beautiful catalog. They're seriously devoted to their work, and they're young enough that they'll be doing this for a long time. So that's the other fun part. They have a great crew. It's absolutely wonderful to be able to grow some of those seeds. And, you got to be enticed. You're not just going to go look at a list and then order a plant, or order some seeds. On the other hand, if you give yourself the opportunity to explore something that you really like, let's say, for example, if you really like squash and you want to grow a different one, well, they got five or six other different choices for you that'll grow right here where you live and give you a chance to grow something that's a little bit different. We gardeners are not without our egos. We like to, you know, that classic cartoon. Oh, gardening is just so fun. It makes me feel so good. And it's all so calm and the sun and this and that and the other. And then the next panel is, especially when my zinnias are bigger than the ones next door. And that's all, that's exactly how we are. We love our own stuff. But if we look over the fence and those tomatoes are not doing so well, we feel better about ourselves. And we may go offer advice that may or may not be wanted. I'll give you a good example of that. I had a garden that was in an old driveway. The beds were elevated, and so therefore the concrete things where the car used to roll up in there were the walkways. So it grew a lot of beautiful elevated beds, lovely, could garden out there all the time. I watched that whole spring. I watched my neighbor try to get things planted in the ground. It was so wet and so muddy that it never did quite work and just ended up tearing up part of the lawn that she had been determined was going to be a vegetable garden. You have to have a little bit of joy from that. She could easily have come over and talked to me, and I'd have been happy to tell her that it was drainage that was the problem and we could have built her beds up a little bit. But sometimes people don't ask, and sometimes advice is not really what they're looking for. So that's one reason I'm glad to be here. Y'all are kind enough to ask, and then you tell me more than I could possibly have known, too. So that's fun. I don't know what that flower is. Excuse me. There's a picture in our show today that somebody didn't identify but sent, and I would guess that it's marked, but I can't really promise that. So I'm sorry. I don't know what that is. We'll see if we can get somebody
to tell us. The Marquis de Heated Pool.
Yeah, that friend of ours, yes. Ooh, Brian and J.S., fire ants around newly planted apple and pear trees, suggestions. Spinosad. It is a naturally sourced control product that will do a good job for you, especially if they're just getting started. You can do them in and they won't be a problem for you.
And other suggestion, don't let them get on you.
Don't let them want to see.
Eat you up, yeah.
Don't let them get
fire ants is hungry.
And they like me a lot. I was pulling weeds the other day, and I said, where have y'all been? What are you doing here?
Yeah, one of them will just do. I mean, one will make a scar. I'll have one for, I mean, it's amazing.
I have several over here.
So much poison in them.
Well, and some of us are more allergic than others, and I'm one of those folks. I don't know. This is going to make me want catfish for lunch. What do you think? Come on now, we got a little ways to go. Send me a text, y'all. I'll be right back.
Cotton fields were white as snow. Catfish was a river hobo. Lived and died by the river's bend.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Hey, this is Bob, and if you're like me, you like dealing with local people. Majestic Metals was founded in Mississippi in 1954 and are headquartered right in Gluckstadt. For complete metal building systems and steel roofing and siding, call the hometown folks. Majestic Metals, 800-647-8540 or online at majesticmetalsinc.com.
Frisco Deli, serving giant sandwiches, award-winning rib plates, and original recipe catfish with a family-friendly atmosphere. Open 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. Frisco Deli, we have something for everyone. Located just off Pearson Road on Phillips Lane in Pearl. Come see us.
Instructors, our mission is to build a legacy that will stand the test of time through hard work, dedication, and pursuing excellence. Key Constructors is a heavy civil construction company, a leader in the bridge construction world. Our goal is to provide a positive work environment for you to grow personally and in your career. We are proud of who we are and what we do, making it happen one bridge at a time. Come join our team of Black Label Bridge Builders. Check out Key Constructors on Facebook and other social media platforms and keyconstructors.com.
It's time.
I'm here at the shop at ESI Supply with TK. Y'all got a lot of safety glasses here.
We have from your economical, tinted and clear. We have anti-fog, polarized. We have readers, side shield, and transition.
From eye protection, fall protection, cut protection, and fire protective clothing, ESI Supply is your headquarters. Stop by and see them at 111 Aerosmith Drive in Richland or give them a call at 601-933-4910. That's 601-933-4910 or online at esisupply.net.
At Watkins Construction and Roofing, we're not just about repairs and replacements. With our roof-aside services, we help keep your roof looking new and free of those unsightly stains and algae for years to come. Safe, effective, and EPA approved. Roof-aside is the simple solution for long-lasting roof protection. No harsh chemicals, no damage, just a clean, beautiful roof. Call Watkins Construction and Roofing today, 601-966-8233 or nomoreroofstains.com.
Make a case for Althea being my favorite flower next to scarlet begonias. You pulled both of those out today. Thank
Nailed
you.
It, didn't I?
Thank you.
Nailed
you did. You did
and
really
Catfish
good.
John, too.
Catfish little, John's fun. That's it's one
makes
of,
me
it's one of
catfish.
Those tunes that you don't hear anywhere, so I'm glad we can play it here.
You can run for the roses, but you worry about that one a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. When's that going to happen? Yeah, I mean, that's a ways away. Fascinating stuff. Y'all are so good. This is just wonderful. Yes, I do love goji berries. And yes, the plant did survive the winter. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Corinne. Let's see. Oh, okay. This is really good. I love this. She had a waxed amaryllis bulb. And, of course, what we do with those after they bloom is we let them rest a while so that then we can, you know, put them out in the garden or bloom them again in a container or whatever we're going to do. Well, it already bloomed again in the garage or by itself with no attention from anybody. Yes, we love that. What a great thing. I would probably take the wax off, yes, before you plant it. I think that's a good idea. But amaryllis, this has just been a beautiful spring for amaryllis. They're every one you see is prettier than the one before, and I love that. Oh, pretty little hyacinth. That's lovely. You won't need to repot it. It's a pretty pink thing. You can plant it in the garden. But you can repot it after the flowers finish, or you can plant it in the garden. It will rebloom at another point down the way. That's pretty. You know, the thing about hyacinths in my – I got this from my grandmother. It's like wearing gloves. You always should wear gloves when you garden. I hear her every time I don't put them on. And then I cut myself, and she's right. But the pink hyacinth was absolutely her favorite. She would grow them every year. And, yeah, they do have a strange smell after the flowers finish. So go ahead and cut the flowers off as they finish and then plant the plant either outside or you can put it literally in another container outside. Black mildew on the crepe myrtles. And azaleas are blooming on the upper third of the plant, the bare limbs below. Okay, this is what happens. When we have a shrub that only blooms on the top, it's more than likely the result of improper pruning in previous years. When we plant azaleas, we plant them knowing they're going to bloom in the springtime. Even if they're on course, they bloom first in the springtime. And then we're going to prune them. And in this case, I believe these were probably pruned irregularly or they were pruned at the bottom because it was in the way of somebody at a later date, might have been in the way of the lawnmower or something, some other tool. So this year, I would definitely go ahead and prune them down maybe, you know, you're going to prune the top part of the plant. You're not going to take a whole third of it off. You might take a quarter in this case. And then you're going to fertilize them with a fertilizer meant for azaleas, camellias, and the other acid-loving plants. Put some fresh mulch around the base of them, and I believe that you will have much better success next year. Black mildew on the crepe myrtles really does depend on where it is. If it's on the bark itself, then you have crepe myrtle bark scale developing. That's a much bigger problem. If it is just a mildew that is on the leaves up in the top of the tree, that's probably something that's not going to be a problem. Some of those leaves will fall off, but it's not going to do any damage to the plant. The crepe myrtle bark scale on the trunks, though, if that's where the black mildew is to be treated with a systemic insecticide. And I suggest that you go and take a look at MSUcares.com or any of the other cooperative extension websites in the area, you know, in the South. They will all have a good article about it, but MSUcares.com has the best, as far as I'm concerned, and to tell you why it happens, how it happens, and what to do about it. It's a problem. It's not something we can get rid of entirely. We can get the bark off, I mean, get the mildew off the bark, but we also have to treat because the insects are still there, and they will be. They'll be there for a long time. It's a big problem. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. Nice note as well. Thank you. I feel like this is absolutely the way it happens. We grow the crepe myrtles, we love them, and then we get some problem on them. And usually it's a small problem, but the crepe myrtle bark scale has really been devastating in a lot of places. I would put it right up there with crepe murder as one of the problems that we have to live through. And sometimes we do. Sometimes we have to literally just walk away and look the other way for a little while.
Yeah, when I hear the chainsaws out in the neighborhood I live in, I'm like, oh, goodness, no.
Here they go.
And then you'll drive around in a Porsche.
But yes, every 15 years or so, if you have cut them back to the stumps, you know, and made stumps up on there so that they bloom in one place and, you know, frankly don't hit the power lines or whatever they're planted underneath, like my neighbors. In that case, you do every now and then want to come down below all of that knob and let them start again. But at that point, you have to be careful because you'll get so much regrowth that you have to go in and thin that a little bit. Still, the trees can be around forever. I mean, in all practical terms, you know, certainly as long as any of us. And they are a very well adapted, what is known as an exotic plant. Native Plant Month is April, and we celebrate the plants that grow naturally and originally in this area. But there are a lot of plants that we use that are considered exotics because they're not from here. It makes it sound so much more romantic, doesn't it? Well, that's an exotic plant. Well, we need both. We need the natives and we need the exotics. So I think it takes both of them to give us what we want. I have no problem growing both of them and growing them together, too, for that matter. I was tickled to find out that, you know, y'all have heard me, I know, talk about my shingles journey this last several months. And now I've got really even more impetus to go and take the vaccine because it been connected directly from the University of Connecticut with, not from them. This is from somebody else, from Stanford, showing us that a study in Wales, which is a real complicated way that they did this, but by literally vaccinating people at two seriously different ages, just one year and then the next, they found out that we can reduce the occasions of dementia in the population with the use of the shingles vaccine. We don't know why, but they're investigating why that happens. But the numbers are there, and it's pretty impressive. I don't like shots. don't like to do that. Did try because I knew I was likely to get the shingles and, in fact, got the shingles. But I'm going to go and get the vaccine this spring as soon as I can find it to take. And I encourage, if you were in my world and you were a person that had chicken pox, because, you know, we were around before there was a vaccine to prevent that. Now we have to do something to prevent the thing that comes along with it, which is, yes, the shingles. Duke University has got a little bit of information I'd love for you to talk over at dinner tonight with your friends and relatives. It turns out birds can't sing when they're born, and they have to practice. It's like, you know, giving your child a drum set. You just have to put up with it. But they go on forever and ever and ever. And then when it's finally working, you know what keeps them going? Just like in human beings, it's a dopamine reaction. Makes you feel better when you sing good. I love that. I'm so happy to know this. At his home office in Durham, this particular neuroscientist has a bunch of birds' brains images in song, and the young zebrafinch's many, many attempts to get that song right just go and go and go, and then it's right. And then that dopamine reaction happens, and the bird can sing that song. I love that. I can't imagine how he decided he wanted to do this. But I think it probably sounded just as awful as that drum set at the beginning. And then they hone their skills. They get better and better. And after a while, they're able to do it. And in fact, that's in the bird world, of course. That is what lets you go on and attract a mate and have future birds. So don't think drum kits necessarily work that way, although Ringo Starr might disagree with me. So many things to think about, so many things to do. Please, y'all, batten down the hatches. If the weather is in your area, be careful. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you here next time for some more Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Propane makes your house a home through the many propane products that are offered. Furnaces, water heaters, fireplaces, clothes dryers, generators, grills, stoves, ovens, and ranges. Clean, efficient energy. Propane. Energy for everyone. Propane. Learn more at mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
We've sent that
a SuperTalk Mississippi Media production.